Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hello, America. I'm Robert Reese, and welcome to CEO Show. We're here today with Peter Cuneo. How are you, Peter?
I'm excellent, Robert. Thank you.
And you're all in for a treat. As you know, I've interviewed about 1,000 CEOs, and Peter is the only one I know who has successfully done 7 turnarounds. And we're going to go in depth on those, and we're going to go into leadership philosophies. So, startup, what are those companies that you turned around?
Originally, I have to say, first of all, I never thought of myself as a turnaround executive. I actually had no idea, never thought about it, no idea that I had any real skills at it. But I was working for Clairol, the hair care company, and my boss one day called me up and said, want you to take over the international division. We can do a lot better. And I was very surprised. The first 6 months or so, frankly, I was pretty down. You know, how am I going to turn around this business in 25 different countries, etc.? But it did work out, and we can talk more about that. The second turnaround was a bigger division of Clairol. And then when I was at Black & Decker, I had 6 divisions, 3 of which were turnarounds, and 2 were in Europe. And doing a turnaround in Italy and in Germany is very different than doing a turnaround in the United States, because of the social laws. I did one for Black & Decker also in the U.S. And then I went to Remington, the shaver company, which was in virtual bankruptcy. We had a very good result there. And then I went from Remington to Marvel Entertainment. Marvel was just coming out of bankruptcy when I arrived, and I was a CEO for almost 4 years, then vice chairman. And after 10 years, we sold to Disney for a very large sum of money, almost $4.5 billion. So in 10 years from bankruptcy to $4.5 billion. So that was a great run and a lot of fun once we got really going after a couple of years.
So before we go into specifics, what is the state of mind? And I know there are 32 essentials you have. Even some are like, you do the waltz or the tango. But what is the whole mindset someone has to go in when you're doing a turnaround? Because a turnaround, you have a lot less options. You usually don't have the cash to play with. And you're being beat up by the market. What's that mindset you go in with?
First of all, let me tell you that people that do turnarounds, and now I'm talking about people who are the operators, who go into the office, as in my case, CEO, but in other C-suite jobs and senior executive jobs, go in every day and have to affect a turnaround when morale is usually not good, and so on. And it's not actually a career for everyone. In fact, people think I'm kidding when I say I think that people that actually take on the challenge of turnarounds are a little off, and I certainly include myself in that. My idea of risk is not the same as other people's risks. And turnarounds are high risk and can be very high reward, yes, but I've never felt the risk the way I think a lot of other people do. And turnarounds are really not situations for most human beings. They're too risk averse, and they just don't need the stress. And so anybody who's watching this and thinking about joining a turnaround situation as an operator should really look inside themselves and say, is this really, for me? I've had people that I've hired, for example, that didn't work out, mainly because the atmosphere they just couldn't handle the atmosphere, because there's a lot of uncertainty. Every day people are nervous about their jobs and what have you, and that constant, if you will, aura of uncertainty is not for everybody.
What are the core mistakes that people make once they're in the turnaround and trying to make things work. You've done seven of these.
And I've made my share of mistakes, clearly. I mean, you know, we're all human and so on. And a lot of the list that I have of 32 essentials of leadership in turnarounds, you know, a number of them came from the fact they were mistakes I made that I learned from. I think, though, that most people going into turnarounds don't realize how hard it will be. The actual health of the company that you're going into is always worse than you think it is. You can never do enough due diligence outside the company to completely understand how bad things are. And so, you know, after I did a couple, first couple, I was used to the fact that things were, I was going to discover some more things that weren't very good once I got inside. And maybe that throws people sometimes. I'm really not sure. This is very different. And I do think in business in general, well, in any organization, business, nonprofit, whatever, but particularly in turnarounds, the culture of the organization actually matters tremendously. Because you're going into a turnaround, that company may be bankrupt or may not be in that bad shape financially, but it is always bankrupt from a cultural standpoint. The value system of the company has to change, and changing the value system of a company, particularly a multinational company, takes time. Because you can talk to the employees all you want about the new value system, but actually in the end, the way it changes is if you as a leader, whether you're the CEO or another senior executive in the company or in the organization you're dealing with, if you behave in the manner you're talking about, that is the new value system. People will be watching for that. Once they see it, they will begin to believe you.
Yeah, I remember you once telling me you walked in and, you know, you walked past the secretary and all of a sudden they said, oh, we're by noon the rumor is we're selling the company. And it's just because you walk straight to your office. So every action you take becomes essential.
Well, it's funny because my wife is sitting here and she's heard this story before, but I will tell it again. And this is a good example of something very minor and simple that had a lot of ramifications negatively. And it's a mistake I made in a turnaround. So in one of the companies I was dealing with, one of my principles is to show positive energy from minute one. If you're the CEO or leader in turnaround, people are watching, and you have to project, even when things aren't so good, very positive outlook and optimism and energy. And I think that in this particular case, I used to come in the office every day. There was a receptionist in the office who was an older lady. I know she'd been with the company like 30 years. She knew everybody. She was a very nice person. And I would say hello every morning, and she would say hello back to me, and we'd have a little chat. And then I'd go to my office. So one day, at breakfast had a little spat with my wife over something really, you would have to say, it was virtually nothing. In fact, I don't even remember what it was. Whatever it was, I'm sure I was wrong, of course. But I had this on my mind and came into the office. And because it was on my mind, I walked right by her, the receptionist, and didn't talk or anything. An hour later, the head of human resources called me and said, Peter, there's major rumors floating around that we're going to have layoffs. Now, we were had not planning any layoffs at that particular time, and I had no idea how that had suddenly started. So I asked him to find out if he could, you know, where this all started, and he called me back later, and he said, well, it seems to have started with our receptionist. And I suddenly realized that she had interpreted my being grumpy, if you will, you know, as there were some hard decisions I was going to have to make. And what was a hard decision when she discussed it with several of her, her friends in the company? It was layoffs. And that turned into a big deal. And it took me a month to convince the organization mostly convinced them by walking around and talking to people individually that there were no layoffs coming. And that was on me. If you talk about mistakes, that was clearly my error. And that's where the essential I have on my list, which is always project a positive, you know, positive energy. That's where it came from.
On that note, we're about to take a commercial break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask about a turnaround, specifically about Marvel, which came in at 96 cents a share, ended up selling to Disney for $54 a share. Back in a few.
Would you like to host your own radio program or podcast? Park City Productions 06604 is a Bridgeport, Connecticut-based radio broadcast solutions company. Follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's Park City Productions 06604. Call us at 203-522-8888.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Welcome back, everyone. We're with Peter Cuneo, and we're talking about turnarounds. And I have to tell you, out of interviewing 1,000 CEOs, he is the only one I know who has actually done 7 successful turnarounds. We're about to now hear the story of Marvel, which when he came in, I think was in bankruptcy, 98 cents a share. I'm giving away the ending, sold a decade later for $54 a share to Disney. So, Peter, talk about Marvel, when you joined, the situation, what your options were, and what your plan was.
Well, actually, I went to Marvel. I didn't know anything about making films. I didn't know anything about comic books. And I will tell you that the process I went through to decide to go was very simple. Marvel had just come out of bankruptcy and was looking for a CEO. And so there are a lot of documents I could look at. Marvel had 7,000 characters that they owned and controlled completely. And in the entertainment business, owning your intellectual property, in this case, the characters were the intellectual property, and being able to control them is a very big, big positive. It's the name of the game, really. And because Marvel had come through a bankruptcy, it had regained the control, the ownership of all these characters, which you can in a bankruptcy proceeding. So I thought that Marvel, even though I was not really into the characters at all, was a gold mine. As I recall, the total valuation of the 7,000 characters coming out of bankruptcy on Marvel's books was $500 million. And I knew that one character, Spider-Man alone, run properly, whose career, Spider-Man's career, we would be the agents of Spider-Man's career, was one property, that one character was worth $500 million, and there were 7,000 characters. So I thought that from a value standpoint, if we executed creatively, we really could go places. And so that's really why I took the job originally. It turned out that not knowing anything about comic books or how to make a movie was a good thing, because I could look at the craziness that exists sometimes in those businesses, and so on. And we could decide, and I say we, because we had a very good group of senior execs. We had a tremendous board. We had an all-star board. And so when I say we, I mean all of these people collectively could look at those businesses and say, and we're talking about culture now, we are not going to compete with the craziness that we see elsewhere. And I'll give you some examples in a minute of what we did in that regard. But we're going to do this differently. And really, the reason that Marvel was so successful comes back to culture. It was a culture of a lot of risk takers, including people on the board who were turnaround people on the board. We're going to change the rules of the game for an entire industry because it's crazy right now, and we're not going back into bankruptcy and what have you. And so that's actually what happened. We found new ways to compete. And, you know, in creative businesses, Robert, you're competing with yourself. You know, people will say, oh, well, you got to compete with DC Comics or someone else. And not really. We just had to create great product, great content, and the rest would take care of itself. And so, so our culture was very different. It was one of challenging all the givens in a particular industry. I'll give you one example. We were partnered with big studios for films. So the first film that happened when I was there was X-Men 1. We were partnered with Fox. A year later, we had Spider-Man 1. That was That was Sony. A year later, we had Hulk. That was Universal, and so on. And when we talked to the agents about casting these films, they always wanted us to cast very big names for a very large amount of money up front. I mean big money up front. And our view was, we don't need big name actors. We need great actors and actresses. But the stars of the movies are the characters, not who's behind the mask. And so if you look at the Marvel movies early on, there were no big names in those castings. And the Hollywood, if you will, milieu, including the reps, the agents, were very unhappy with us because we were not spending a lot of money on lead roles. In some cases, we were introducing people for the first time to lead roles. And they all worked out beautifully, actually, as I think history shows. So, that was one of many differences. We just wouldn't give in, we wouldn't give in to the norms in the industry.
Talk about the whole financial turnaround and how you engineered that. Because you went in, there was no money. It was like $3 million capital total. No real estate, no assets. Yet somehow you turned it around and grew it from that to $4.5 billion.
Well, actually, there was more than $3 million. At one point, about a year after I got there, we were down to $3 million. When I first arrived, it was a little better than that. But here's something that I think everybody should realize. When a company goes through a bankruptcy and comes out of bankruptcy, the company is really not in perfect shape at all. You know, going through bankruptcy, I often say, is like going through, I hate to say it, chemotherapy. You know, you may be cured, but you've lost all your hair. And basically, that's what you're dealing with. And the capital structure of a company coming out of bankruptcy is not the perfect capital structure for that company going forward. The capital structure really is only what the creditors could agree upon. So I inherited a capital structure that was completely wrong for Marvel. But we had a couple of things. We had some debt that we were actually able to buy in over time. At a deep discount. We actually paid 52 cents on the dollar to buy in our debt. That was, huge. The debt was 12% coupon, so we were buying in effect 24% money. Great arbitrage for us. And then we had a PIK preferred, which we converted from preferred to common shares eventually. And so on. And, it was not easy. And a little known fact that I think has been lost in time is that, our major shareholder, his name is Ike Perlmutter, actually took out a very large loan to help the company. And it was done through his personal guarantee. It was several hundred million dollars. And he was a risk taker, clearly. He was a risk taker. He believed in the business, and I think that's been lost to time. But that was really an important event for us.
Peter, just tremendous having you as always on the CEO show.
Robert, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed it, and hopefully your viewers may get something from this. That's my sincere wish. Thanks.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S. patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
$1,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
We've entered a time where sky truly is the limit and opportunity awaits. The internet has become a platform of everyone's worldwide communications. Billionaires building businesses on platforms that didn't even exist a generation ago. But in the sea of noise, how can the voice of your business be heard? The secret is over 100 years old. Radio. 228% more effective than TV. That's 228% more effective than television. Brick and mortar and cyber businesses alike have found radio to be the most effective for building a brand and delivering customers. Learn the secrets of radio advertising by calling 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
America, I'm Robert Reese, and welcome to CEO Show. We're here today with David Rubenstein. How are you, David?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And David, as you know, is the co-founder and co-chairman of the Carlyle Group. And we've spoken with David previously, as you're aware, but right now is a critical juncture in time. As we are emerging from the pandemic, what's more requisite than anything is leadership. So we're going to talk about his leadership philosophy, risk, competitive positioning, and how we make the world better. So let's start off. David, if you could talk about, if you were through all of your experiences, how would you codify your leadership philosophy?
Well, I guess my philosophy is that if you want to be a leader, you have to lead. And to lead, you have to learn how to communicate with people. You have to get them to follow you. And the best way to get people to follow you is by leading by example. So if you really want to be a great leader, do what you're telling other people to do. If you tell people to do a certain thing after the pandemic, you should be doing it yourself. You also want to inspire confidence in people. People want to be led in most cases, but they want to have confidence in the person that's leading them. So it's very important that you conduct yourself in a way where people will say, I trust this person, I have confidence in this person, I will follow this person.
And that changes or does not change because of the current environment we're in right now?
Well, leadership is the same through the centuries. You have to have certain abilities to inspire people. You have to have the ability to give them confidence. But we have a very difficult situation now. All of us are used to situations where you come back after a vacation, you come back after maybe a summer off or something, but virtually nobody is used to taking more or less a year off or a year and a half off, working remotely, and now coming back to the office. It's a very difficult situation. No answer is perfect. No CEO has a perfect answer. And I think each organization has to come up with what works best for that organization. But I think you have to be a CEO who says, this is what we're going to do. I'm providing leadership. If you want to be part of the team, follow me. You can't say, do whatever you want. Everything that is okay, whatever you want to do is fine with me. That's nice and might sound nice in a party or something. But if you really want to be a leader in business, you have to give people a sense of leadership. You have to tell them, this is what we are going to do. Now, all organizations are now struggling with, do you come back 5 days a week? Do you come back less than 5 days a week? Do you come back no days a week? Do you work remotely for part of the time? How do you keep people engaged in what you're doing? How do you educate people? These are the issues that everybody's struggling with. There's no perfect answer.
When you're looking about that, you're talking about really the new model of connected workforce. And being that no one really knows, and you're saying a leader has to take the front position, how do leaders discern what the best way to move forward in terms of the workforce, the technology, who will work out of the office? Do they let things where people emerge and keep changing? How do you stay, in other words, in the leadership position when you're in unprecedented and uncharted waters?
In this particular case, no one has a perfect answer because we really haven't been through something like this in our lifetimes. But I would say what most CEOs that I'm aware of are doing is they're talking to their senior people. They're also talking to the people that often are the real leaders in the lower part of the organization, the younger people. What do the younger people think is appropriate? What do some of the senior leaders think is appropriate? Talk to them, gauge their views, but then you as the CEO have to come up with the correct decision about what the organization is going to do. Now, you should recognize there is no perfect decision. Whatever you do, somebody will find some fault with it, and whatever you do, you'll realize you could have done something better. But you have to take a position. For example, we've seen that Jamie Dimon has said he wants his people back in the office. We've seen that David Solomon says he wants his people back in the office at Goldman Sachs. Maybe they're making changes on how they normally get people in the office, but people in some cases are saying, well, I want people back in the office. Other CEOs are saying, if you want to work at home 5 days a week, that's okay if you actually can do the job. And other people are saying, come in 3 days a week, come in 2.5 days a week, whatever you think is appropriate. Whatever the leader thinks is appropriate for his or her organization is what the leader should come back with and say, this is what we're doing. That doesn't mean that it's etched in stone. It's not the Ten Commandments. Maybe after a week or a month or 6 months, people will say, I didn't really do it quite the way I wanted to do it, but here's what we should do to adjust. And so I think the most important thing is take a position, be firm, say what you believe is the right thing to do, and then follow through with that as much as you can.
It reminds me of what Bill Marriott, or Mr. Marriott, once told me, which is decide to decide. So let's move on to the concept of risk. Let's say if Abe Lincoln, who I and many view as the greatest leader of contemporary times, what would he say the greatest risks are in our world right now?
Well, of course, Abraham Lincoln was living in different times. It's hard to know what he would have said today. But I think he was the kind of person who listened to other people and didn't put his ego at stake. He did what he thought was best for the organization, the country, the government, and he tried to not have his ego be the most important thing. So I think whatever you decide to do as the CEO, I think the most important thing is to make it about the organization and not about you. Don't make it what's convenient for you. Don't say, this is what I think we should do because I'm smarter than you. I'm better than you. I know more than you know. Don't tell people how great you are. Let other people tell you how good you are. What you need to do is figure out what makes the most sense for the organization and then provide leadership. People want to be led. We can't have 7.5 billion leaders on the face of the earth. We can have a limited number of leaders. In your own organization, you are the leader. And if you don't lead, you've got to get out of the way because people will want somebody who's a leader. So don't be afraid of making a mistake. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes. Everybody understands mistakes. What people don't want is somebody who isn't leading. That's a bigger mistake, and that's a mistake that's not really forgivable.
Strong point. Let's talk about the markets. A lot of people are talking about inflation. As you look at risk, you have a deep, deep background. What is your sense of the risk in terms of the financial markets, capital markets?
The principal issue the markets are waiting for is figuring out when the Federal Reserve is going to increase interest rates, because interest rates have been artificially low for quite some time. And I think it's going to be a while before the Fed is really ready to increase interest rates. They've given signals that in 2023 they expect to do some interest rate increases, perhaps two. Some people think the Fed will do so sooner. In my own view, I don't think the Fed is going to do anything that quickly, certainly not before the election in 2022. I believe that the Federal Reserve and certainly the administration, to the extent it has influence, does not really want to see interest rates go up before the election, because that's likely to produce a bad effect on the stock market and it will have deleterious effects on the economy, I think most people think. So therefore, I think the administration would view, if they had control over it, they don't control the Fed, but the administration would like to see the problem we've had with the economy get out of the way, have the recovery be complete, have the vaccination process be complete, and then we'll assess the situation. Now, as some of you have heard me say before, when I worked in the White House under President Carter, we had double-digit inflation. So the kind of inflation we're talking about now is nothing compared to what we had then. If you went to college in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s, the standard textbooks would say that inflation that was normal would be 3 or 4% a year. But in the last 10, 15 years, we've become used to inflation that's under 2%. Now that inflation seems to be hovering around maybe 3% for at least a while, that's not so bad in my view. I don't think it's going to have deleterious effects on the economy. Now, if it were to go up from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6% and it was going to stay there, that's a problem for sure. But I think the Federal Reserve's view and my view is that it'll probably hover around 3% and go back to closer to 2% in the next 6 months to 9 months, because we really have artificial things that are making inflation a little bit higher. I think many manufacturers did not correctly anticipate how great consumer spending would be during the period of the pandemic, and therefore they shut down or modified their production capabilities. Now they're ramping up again, they've had to ramp up and therefore pay higher costs to get supplies and so forth. But I don't really think we see an enduring double-digit inflation problem or even a double-digit problem of any type in terms of interest rates or anything like that.
So many people have said right after the pandemic, we went into the roaring 20s. From 1918. Do you see something like that happening with our economic risk or not really?
The roaring 20s occurred because I think the government was not quite as sophisticated then about inflation, interest rates, and managing the economy. I think the government is much better, so I don't see an out-of-control roaring 20s again. But I do think the economy will do reasonably well for at least another year or so, because I think you have a lot of pent-up demand. People are willing to spend. They're going to come out of their homes and begin spending, traveling, and so forth. And I think while inflation is not going to go to very high levels, it may inch up a little bit from where it's been over the last decade or so. That's not something I worry about that much. But I do think that the stock market and spending will be reasonably strong. I don't think, though, we're going to see a roaring 20s situation will lead to a Great Depression. I think it was too much out of control in the roaring 20s that led to the Great Depression. I don't see anything like that in the offing.
Well, thank you, David. A pleasure having you on the CEO show.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
An important message from Byram Healthcare. If you live with diabetes, you know how challenging and painful it can be to manage your blood sugar. With private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid, that can all change. If you test your blood sugar 4 or more times a day and inject insulin 3 or more times a day, you may qualify to receive at little or no cost, less copays and deductibles, a continuous glucose monitor, providing blood sugar readings with no uncomfortable finger sticks. That alerts you in real time to potential spikes with your blood sugar levels. Byram Healthcare is a leading U.S. provider of continuous glucose monitors. We carry most major brands and will work with your insurance to get your benefits approved. So if you have diabetes, call a U.S.-based Byram Healthcare specialist now and see if you qualify.
800-535-6078. 800-535-6078. 800-535-6078. That's 800-535-6078.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
I spend a lot of time in the garage.
but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hello, America. This is Robert Reese, and we're with David Rubenstein, the co-founder and co-chairman of the Carlyle Group. When you really started the Carlyle Group, there weren't many models. How did you view the positioning at that point in terms of what you were trying to accomplish?
When I started Carlyle with some partners in 1987, the phrase private equity had not even yet been invented. We were known as a buyout shop. And later they became private equity firms and so forth. But the whole idea of building a global private equity firm or a global buyout shop did not exist. I had a vision, which my partners agreed to, that we would build a kind of Fidelity or T. Rowe Price of private equity, which is to say, not just do buyouts, but to do many different things in different private investment categories, growth capital, real estate, debt, whatever it might be, and then globalize it. So we'd be a global private investment firm. Obviously, others have done the same. Blackstone, KKR, Apollo are really in the same category doing the same things. So I had a vision of where we wanted to go, which is to be a global, multidisciplined firm. And ultimately, I thought we would take it public, which we did.
From there, what lessons did you learn about how you go into a market?
Well, when you're going into a new market, what we tended to do was to make sure we had local people and local knowledge. We didn't take Yankees and send them to Europe or Asia or Latin America or the Middle East. We would hire local people, but always make certain they were part of a firm. We weren't franchising our name. We made certain they were part of one firm. The most important thing of any organization is its culture. You have to have a certain culture, and that culture has to be one that people buy into and feel that it's a pleasant place to work. You can't really keep great people if they feel it's not a good culture, not a happy culture. You can always pay people a lot of money, and sometimes you can get them to stay. But if the culture is not good, eventually people who are good are going to leave or start their own organization. So culture is the most important thing, making sure you have local knowledge, and also communicating with people all over the world regularly so that they know what you think is very important.
And how about what we've seen from a societal standpoint in terms of bringing harmony to America? We obviously have a great divide politically, racially. What is your take on how CEOs manage that?
Well, you're correct. The country right now is fairly divided. The Congress isn't able to do that much because it's bitterly divided between Democrats and Republicans, but that really reflects the country. We have red states and we have blue states in ways that we didn't 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where a state might go Democratic or Republican in a presidential election. Now you can pretty much predict how 80, 85% of the states are going to go in every presidential election because we become red or we become blue, and it's going to take a while to change that. I think CEOs have to be sensitive to that. I think getting involved in politics is probably generally not a good thing for CEOs to be too actively involved in politics as a general rule of thumb. I think it's better to kind of stay out of politics. That doesn't mean you should be silent, though, on issues like racial harmony or income inequality. I think a CEO has an obligation to speak up on issues that are important to the country, but also important to the customer base, also important to the employee base. You don't want to have an employee base that thinks that the CEO is completely insensitive to racial problems in the country or completely insensitive to climate change or other things. Now, how much impact you can have is a different issue, but I think giving voice to some of these concerns in an appropriate way does help the company.
You are coming out with a new book, correct?
I have a new book called The American Experiment, which is about what it means to be an American. What are the unique qualities that have come together to produce this country over the last 230 years or so since the Constitution was ratified? And I also have a new TV show on investing where I talk to the greatest investors in the world about what it means to be a great investor, how they do it, and how people can not necessarily follow them becoming great leaders like they did in the investment world, but also they can get some tips on how they can invest their own money. So, yes, thank you very much for mentioning that.
What is your hope for America and how we will emerge in terms of the fabric of the world?
Clearly, we've suffered a black eye in the eyes of many people around the world following the most recent election. So whatever side you're on, I think you have to recognize that the system we had didn't work perfectly. And therefore, we need to make ways, find ways to make the system work better so people think it's fair and we honor the commitments that the founding fathers had. Their rhetoric was wonderful. Obviously, they didn't live up to the rhetoric in everything they did. But the rhetoric is wonderful of everyone being equal, everybody having certain rights. And we need to do more than we have done to make certain that system really comes to be.
If you were thinking from the Constitution of any one article that codifies where we need to be as a nation, what would that be?
Well, in the Constitution, there are many important things, but I think the most important part of the Constitution probably is the Bill of Rights. It wasn't part of the Constitution initially, but I think it gives us protections and freedoms that I think are essential. And interestingly, in a survey that I had done in preparation for my book, most people in the United States, when they're asked what is the most important right they have in this country, it's the right to free speech. That is very important to people, extremely important. And I think that is very important to me as well. I think people should have the right to be able to speak and say what they want, though I don't think you should shout down people that might have different views. And we should let people express themselves, assuming they're not inciting riots or doing hate kinds of related things. But I do think the right to freedom of speech and the right to freedom of religion is very important in our country.
How do you get people to really listen, to open up and say, we are not going to be stuck in our stance. We want to listen to others and embrace others, even when they have different views.
Theory behind a democracy that we have, a representative democracy, is that there's an informed citizenry. Now, we have not done a wonderful job informing the citizenry in some cases. We don't teach civics or history very much anymore. And you find an appalling lack of knowledge of how our government works by many people in our country. So if there was one thing I would do, I would try to educate more people about civics and education and educate them about civics and history. But also, I would want to make sure people can learn how to read better. As you may have heard me say before, 14% of the people in this country are functionally illiterate. They can't read past the fourth grade level. If you're functionally illiterate, you have a high chance of being in our juvenile delinquency system or in our federal prison system, and you also don't have a very good chance of earning a good income. So I think we've got to educate people better, make our schools better, but also begin to make certain that people understand what the government is all about and know more about our history.
And let's tie that back into the final question of this radio interview, which is, what is the CEO's role in doing that?
The CEO has to be the leader. If you are feeling that you're not really equipped to be a leader, don't be the CEO. There's nothing wrong with not being the CEO of a company. Many people are not CEOs, and they have quite nice lives. But if you want to be a CEO, you have to provide leadership. You have to say, how can I get people to follow me? You have to show people where you're going, and you have to show them how you're going to get there. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be an effective CEO. But I think three skills that I think are very important in communicating as a CEO are, one, learning how to communicate orally. So when you make a speech, you do it in a way that people feel they've heard something that's important to follow. Second, learning how to write well. Learning how to communicate by written form is also very important. Learning how to express yourself in written forms, particularly in an age when so many people are reading so many things over the Internet, is very important. And third, as I said earlier, the most important way to lead and the best way to lead is leading by example. You say you're going to do something, you want others to do it. Do it yourself. You say it's important to do this or that, do it yourself. Show people by your example. That's the best way to lead.
On that note, thank you, David. A pleasure having you again on the CEO show.
My pleasure.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.